Just 7 weeks after a violent police raid cleared away Occupy Los Angeles's tent city on the steps of City Hall, downtown LA this week has been the site of evening military drills. The drills are significant because they're being held by the U.S. military jointly with the Los Angeles Police Department. According to CBS News, the joint military drills will be held in various other parts of the LA area and are, among other things, quote, designed to ensure the military's ability to operate in urban environments. Meanwhile, longtime local activist Carlos Montes had a scheduled court appearance this week on six felony charges stemming from an FBI raid of his home last May. The raid was conducted by an LA County Sheriff's SWAT team accompanied by federal FBI agents. Veteran journalist Chris Hedges, writing about Carlos Montes last year, noted, quote, "In the eyes of the state, we are increasingly no longer citizens with constitutional rights, but enemy combatants. The increase in collusion between federal agents, the military, and local law enforcement is a disturbing trend, underscored by the recent signing into law of the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows the government to imprison Americans on suspicion of terrorism, detain them indefinitely, deny them habeas corpus, and even transport them to off-site facilities. The fears of a national security state come at the same time as a mass movement of citizens around the nation are decrying wealth inequality and persistently shining a spotlight on corporate and moneyed interests through actions against home foreclosures, student tuition hikes, or anti-worker legislation. What are the implications of state repression in a democracy locally and nationally?" Joining me in studio this morning to discuss it is Hamid Khan. He's a Soros Justice Fellow working on a campaign to end LAPD's Special Order 11. He's also the former executive director of the South Asian Network and an occasional guest host for Uprising. Welcome to Uprising, Hamid.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk about these joint military drills. The ACLU a couple of years ago, actually in 2008, had brought up the issue of the deployment of a Homeland Army brigade in the United States as a very, very disturbing trend, saying that it erodes the longstanding separation between civilian and military governments. Is it coincidental, you think, that these military drills happening in Los Angeles this week are happening in downtown LA, where just last year we saw a major presence of a mass citizen uprising against wealth inequality?
Well, I guess you were alluding to the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Army Infantry Division, which was based out of Georgia, attached to the North Command, which started back in 2008. I think we have to really look at it in the larger context of history and what has been the role of military deployment within the United States. Obviously, the stated goal is, and I'm just looking at, so I don't misquote that, that this will be, talking about this downtown operations, that this will be routine training conducted by military personnel designed to ensure the military's ability to operate in urban environment and prepare forces for upcoming overseas deployment, blah, blah, blah. So I think we need to look at these two things about the urban environment and overseas deployment as to what has been the growing relationship between the U.S. military and local law enforcement as well, and how LAPD has been on the cutting edge of developing new tactics to be more of a counterinsurgency force. We saw the unleashing of the force during the Occupy. We've seen at various other times, and I think I just want to take a step back because there is this sort of misunderstanding that military doesn't play a role within domestic operations of law enforcement in the United States. But when you look at history, and I just kind of looked at a few instances, looking at the Wounded Knee Massacre in South Dakota in the 1800s, the Chicago Pullman Rail Strike in late 1800s, the Idaho Silver Miner Strike in Minnesota, Chippewa Indians, in Oklahoma Creek Indian Revolt in 1900, the Black Uprisings in 1943 in Detroit, after Dr. King was shot in 1968. You know, just you go on.
All of those
these are all
where the military joined in?
Directly involved, mm-hmm. you know. While under the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, there were certain prohibitions, but they were only on three branches of the military.
So there were the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 prohibits, as far as I understand, in certain collaborations between the military of the United States and domestic policing.
Domestic policing, the deployment of military troops. Mm-hmm. But it only limits Army, Navy, and the Air Force. It doesn't limit Coast Guard and National Guards in that. So, and just more recently, earlier in this month, we'd seen how the Coast Guard escorted and broke against the strikebreakers this delivery of grain up the Columbia River for Bungie Corporation as well.
Have we seen in the historical examples that you related, do we see this kind of military deployment happening at tumultuous times in the United States when citizens are rising up, when there is mass unrest?
Well, I mean, there's also history of that. There were almost 40 cases of troop deployment since the 1970 postal strike that Nixon had called in. So when you look at various you know, aspects of it, and obviously one of the most obvious one is since 1992 after the Rodney King trial, and you saw deployment of National Guards in Los Angeles right here as well, and then at various other times, absolutely, whenever people have risen up and these uprisings have taken place, military has been deployed very effectively.
So we're talking about militarism, but sort of a related assault on our civil liberties mm-hmm. is surveillance. Mm-hmm. And is the involvement of federal agents with local law enforcement, and also the increasing behavior by local law enforcement to emulate national security. Mm-hmm. There's certainly the issue of immigration, where federal ICE agents of Immigration and Customs Enforcement have coordinated with local law enforcement and in various parts of the country. And that's something that's very much frowned upon because it creates insecurity within the immigrant community and their ability to reach out to law enforcement. But then there's also the criminalizing of dissent that uh-huh. we've seen most recently. You're working on a campaign to end LAPD's Special Order 11. Tell us what Special Order 11 is and how it relates to the sort of surveillance state that is very much a part of what we're seeing in Los Angeles locally.
Absolutely. So essentially, Special Order 11 is an order that was issued by the former LAPD Chief William Bratton in March of 2008 that mandates LAPD officers to file suspicious activity reports based on observed or reported behavior. Which means that if an LAPD officer observes a certain suspicious activity, which they deem to be suspicious, it doesn't have to be. And a lot of these activities are your daily non-criminal type activities, like taking photographs in public, using binoculars, drawing diagrams, taking notes, evasive driving, changing appearances, a lot of things that we do on a daily basis.
For our own personal reasons.
For our own personal reasons, you know. So you file, or it could be reported, which is the extension of Special Order 11 under the iWatch program. So they could be reported by a neighbor. So in essence, some of the reports that we have from the beginning of the program up until July 2010, in a matter of 27 months, 2,743 reports were filed. Wow. When you do the math, that comes to three reports a day. So again, we need to look at it in a historic context as well, that we talk about COINTELPRO and counterintelligence program, but LAPD was known for its public disorder intelligence division, or the Red Squads. And there was a time that over 200 social justice organizations in L.A., in Southern California, were infiltrated by LAPD, including the National Organization of Women. When Tom Bradley was a sitting mayor, his office was infiltrated. Zevri Orlowski, when he was a council member, his office was infiltrated. So surveillance and infiltration, I think we need to de-romanticize it and look at it as a necessary tool for law enforcement.
Well, the pretext is often, of course, rooting out subversive elements in the general, in the current climate that is terrorism. Is
right.
that how the Special Order 11 is justified and has been justified since it was put into place?
Yes. I mean, that's the rhetoric again, and that was the basis. And it's an extension of a congressional act from 2004, which is the 2004 Act of Intelligence Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act. But I think here we need to draw parallels with the war on drugs, that essentially what has happened is that these orders are, while they started off with national security issues, but now they have taken an all-crimes approach. So basically, it's not just a matter of national security or an act of terrorism. It is it's a new concept that has been introduced of predictive policing, that somebody is up to no good and we can speculate based on this observed behavior, so we need to investigate. So it creates a pretext for investigation.
So it's sort of preemptive striking out.
Basically, it's preemptive policing. Absolutely. Absolutely.
My guest is Hamid Khan. He is a Soros Justice Fellow working on a campaign to end LAPD's Special Order 11. We're talking about domestic surveillance and militarism here in Los Angeles and nationally as well and historically. What should people think about in this current climate where wealth inequality, high unemployment, home foreclosures, and all of these other economic ills are affecting people so seriously, also affecting people of color disproportionately. And at the same time, people are finding their voice finally. They're finding, you know, in the Occupy movement and various related movements, some that even came before the Occupy movement that continue. Students are rising up in greater numbers. Should we be expecting the state to crack down and really be vigilant?
Well, we should absolutely be expecting the state to crack down and be extremely vigilant about the shifting environment of law enforcement as well. I mean, I think when we look at it, this whole shift into militarism, and I think we have to look at these two different parallel streams that emerged. One is the militarization, which is like this lethal use of force, like the SWAT team. And now you see, like, you know, everything from almost these armored vehicles that roam our streets to this other notion of community policing, which really is a facade and it's a front for pacification. It's
let's talk about that, because community policing is a great little catchphrase that's used not only by law enforcement, but even by some advocates of local community organizations that work on gang prevention, et cetera. But you're saying community policing should be treated suspiciously?
We should absolutely be looking at community policing with suspicion. Why? Because while on one hand law enforcement comes across as problem solvers, as, you know, trying to come together with the community and being a part of the community, I think the issue with that is that these relationships, and I say that based on historical facts, that, and this is where infiltration comes in, that it's about gathering information on people. So in essence, anything, any activity would be deemed subversive, while the front would be that it's about, you know, some criminal act may be conducted. But this is where speaking out for your rights also comes in as well.
So community policing legitimizes the police in the community, but also encourages this type of reporting on one's neighbors.
Absolutely. And that's what this relationship is all about. So now, particularly in these times of huge, intense economic crisis and these uprisings, and it's not just Occupy, these uprisings are taking place in many small places. Yeah. You know, people are speaking out. So at the same time, then, what is the role of community leaders in quite essentially snitching on their own communities when people are speaking out?
And I should bring up the cases of a number of local folks here. One is Carlos Montes, who I mentioned earlier. We've covered his case. He was raided. His home was raided by by LA County Sheriff's SWAT team and federal agents, FBI agents, last year. He is facing 6 felony charges. Then we have the case of local activist Garrick Ruiz, who was involved in civil disobedience last year, and who seems to have been sort of picked up by the police on spurious charges. This is certainly speculation. He has to turn himself in on Monday. It seems as though there are other members, other people, other local activists involved in the Occupy movement that have been arrested outside of the confines of the tent city and their activist work.
Absolutely.
So are you seeing tangible examples like this popping up more and more?
I think these are not, we shouldn't look at these as merely coincidence. I think we should be looking at this, again, looking at a historical context as well, that these are patterns that we see over time, that how they just don't let up. I mean, and what I know of Garrick's case, you know, he, and there are a few things that, that come out of this thing. One is that he was assaulted literally by what I know of by off-duty sheriffs. Mm-hmm. So who were working as security guards at this one place. And now the city attorney has brought back with the deal the charges, which from his previous political civil disobedience, and using those to send him to jail. So similarly, there have been cases of some of the Occupy folks who were arrested during Art Walk as well just a few weeks ago in Los Angeles.
During Art Walk, so not engaged in protesting.
Not engaged in protesting, yeah.
And I should mention Garrick Ruiz has been a frequent guest on Uprising and is a well-known local activist. Hamid, finally, in the work that you're doing to expose what the LAPD is up to, what sort of pushback can local community organizations, but activists, as well as activist groups, what sort of pushback can there be? And are people organizing around it? Or is this currently a time of investigation where people like you are just digging deep into the into what's happening and doing research? Is there action on this? Because when we see these sorts of assaults, one immediately wonders what sort of defense one can organize against.
Absolutely.
It.
Well, I think investigation always happens and research continues, but there's definitely action taking place. There's a whole campaign that is there to rescind Special Order 11. There's going to be a public town hall, a public unveiling on Saturday, March 3rd at 10:30 in the morning at the SEIU Hall on 828 West Washington. And that's where we will map out a plan that how can the communities be engaged, because I think it's extremely necessary that the state always uses the rhetoric of the other. It used to be the commies, these used to be the anarchists, now it's the terrorist Muslim. But when you look at it, the fundamental premise of Special Order 11 is that we are all guilty until proven innocent. Mm-hmm. So I think it affects each one of us and we need to take action.
Can you repeat the town hall information again?
Yes, it is Saturday, March 3rd at 10:30 in the morning at the SEIU Hall near USC at 828 West Washington Boulevard, Los Angeles. And they can get further information on the website at www.stoplapdspying.org, or they can make a phone call at 562-230-4578.
And we'll post all of that information, the phone number, the website, the address and date and time of the town hall on our website, uprisingradio.org, later today. Again, stoplapdspying.org is what my guest Hamid Khan recommends. Hamid, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Best of luck in your work. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hamid Khan is a Soros Justice Fellow working on a campaign to end LAPD Special Order 11. He's also the former executive director of the South Asian Network and an occasional guest host here on Uprising. And the website, again, is stoplapdspying.org.